Today I would like to begin talking about something a little bit different. I talk a lot about us being a people of prayer, presence, and power. Today I also want to talk about living from a place of promise and how that relates to prayer, presence, and power. We're going to do this by looking at the life of Moses and Joshua over the next few weeks. We're going to start with Moses. Way back when the people were in bondage in Egypt, the scriptures are on the green sheet, but if you want to turn in your own Bible, it's Exodus 3. So we're going to kind of hop and skip through Exodus and then into the book of Joshua over the next few weeks and look at what it means to be a people of promise and how do we live from a place of promise and what are the things that will come against us and prevent us from living from a place of promise. So back in the beginning of Exodus, God appears to Moses in a burning bush, and he makes this promise that we see in Exodus 3:7. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. So God sees. When we're suffering, he sees. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, and Muscovites. Just making sure you're awake. All right, so Moses has this dramatic encounter with God in the bush. And in that encounter, God gives this promise that I'm going to deliver my people from Egypt, and I'm going to take them into a land flowing with milk and honey. Oh, by the way, the land's already inhabited by a bunch of big bad people that are your enemies. Okay? So he sets the stage. I'm going to deliver you. Here's the promise of what it's going to look like. And oh, by the way, you're going to have some obstacles along the way. Okay? Now, this is the first promise in a sequence of promises that we're going to look at. But as soon as we see this promise, I'm going to deliver you. I'm going to take you into the promised land. Trouble begins right away. All right? Moses goes to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh responds by making the work even harder, right? We've all remembered that story from watching Ben-Hur on TV at Easter. They're required to make bricks without straw. They're required to make even more bricks. And so after the promise, things get more difficult. But this is the reality that we live in. When we get promise from God, the enemy will come and try to steal it. But the only way he can do that is through discouragement. Let me repeat that. When we get promise from God, the enemy is going to come and try to steal it. But he cannot steal what God has promised. Can't do it. The only way he can do it is through discouragement, getting you discouraged enough that you won't press on for the promise. And so that's what it means to live from a life of promise. So, continuing Exodus 5:22, Moses goes back to God to complain. So verse 22 says, Moses returned to the Lord and said, O Lord, why have you brought trouble upon this people? Is this why you sent me? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble upon this people, and you have not rescued your people at all. So God makes this big promise, but it doesn't come to pass right away. So right away, Moses and the people lose faith, and they become discouraged. And right away, we see Moses go back to God and begin to complain. God, you made the promise. You haven't done anything. Where are you? In fact, it's gotten worse. All right, I think many of us can relate to being in that place, can't we? God, where are you? It seems like it's gotten worse. Why haven't you done anything? Wait a minute. Is that from God? Or is that the discouragement of the enemy to prevent us from walking in promise? So right away, we begin to see the connection between both the promise of God and our faith and discouragement. The promise of God has not changed. He has still promised to deliver them. But the discouragement is kicking in because the promise was not immediately fulfilled. Well, so God responds to this complaint of Moses with more promise and promise review, as I call it. Exodus 6, verse 1. Then the Lord said to Moses, Now you will see what I will do to Pharaoh. Because of my mighty hand, he will let them go. Because of my mighty hand, he will drive them out of this country. In this verse, God restates the promise, but with different imagery. God is making it clear that he is the one who will influence Pharaoh. This is more promise. And this is important. See, Moses doesn't have to do the work. The people don't have to do the work. God will do it. The people do, however, have to have faith for it and move forward like it's happening. So God says, the promise is still in place. I'm the one doing the work. And so often when we're trying to live out of a place of promise, we think it's something we have to do. We work harder, we strive, we struggle. And God's like, no, I got this. But at the same time, we do have to move forward. Okay, they've just been asked to make more bricks with no straw. Moving forward is going to be difficult. But that's what living from a place of promise looks like. Now, continuing Exodus 6, verse 6 says this, therefore say to the Israelites, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm, with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you as a possession. I am the Lord. He very clearly restates the original promise. He's going to deliver them. He's going to take them to the promised land. He points out that this promise is long-standing. It goes all the way back to Abraham. And notice the patience that God has. Despite the fact that they're not exactly getting it at the moment, he's still very patiently restating promise. This is the promise that you will live from. But the people again respond with disbelief and fear. Exodus 6, 9. Moses reported this to the Israelites, but they did not listen to him because of their discouragement and cruel bondage. They cannot receive the promise of God because of discouragement. Discouragement is actually stealing the promise. Again, discouragement doesn't come from the Father, either for the Israelites or for us. When we have that this is never going to happen discouragement feeling, that's from the enemy. Because that's the only way he can steal the promise from you, is to discourage you to the point where you stop pursuing it and stop going after it. The people couldn't receive this message from the Lord because they couldn't see past their present circumstances. They couldn't see past the cruel bondage. They have this incredible promise before them, and yet again, they can't press past their circumstances, and their fear is limiting their faith. So many Christians today live their life from a place of fear and discouragement rather than a place of promise. Do you see the difference? Christians today, we live our lives from a place of fear and discouragement rather than living it from a place of promise. Can you already begin to see the difference from living out of a place of versus living out of a place of discouragement and fear? Well, now we see more disbelief and fear. And in fact, now this time it begins to affect Moses. Exodus 6:10 says this, then the Lord said to Moses, go tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the Israelites go out of his country. But Moses said to the Lord, if the Israelites will not listen to me, why would Pharaoh listen to me, since I speak with faltering lip? God repeats the assignment of Moses. Go tell Pharaoh. Now remember, the promise has been given. God says he will do this. God has said, I will do this. I am the one that will affect Pharaoh. I am the one that will cause Pharaoh to let them go. Now here he tells Moses, you go deliver the message. And Moses says, I can't do it. He won't listen to me. Moses has already forgotten the promise. God says, I'm the one that's going to do it. And yet Moses has already fallen into the trap of thinking he's the one that's got to do it. God didn't say, you go do it, Moses. He just said, go deliver the message. I will cause Pharaoh to do it. But the discouragement of the people has now affected the way Moses thinks. He's already tried this. It didn't go well. The people are grumbling. I can't do it. I can't be your mouthpiece. So at this point, Moses has a choice. Have faith in the promise of God or give into fear and disbelief. Verse 12, he gives into fear and disbelief. And he blames the people and his speech problems for it. He isn't exactly living from a place of promise at this point, is he? But at least he's honest with God about his fear and disbelief. That's important. At least he shares that with God. Well, now as we continue to look at this, we're going to begin to see that difficulty in fulfilling promise comes with purpose. Difficulty has purpose. On your green sheet, I'm sorry, the next passage just says 17. It's Exodus 13, verse 17. It says Exodus 13. It says this, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not let them on the road through the Philistine country. He did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt armed for battle. So Pharaoh has finally let the people go at this point in the story, right? And remember, God has promised to lead them on this journey. But here in this passage, it says that God led them away from the Philistine country, even though that route was shorter. Have you ever felt like in your journey through a difficult time, you're on the long path? Like, seriously, Lord, it seems like I'm supposed to be over there and you've got me in Timbuktu. Why am I on the... Have you ever felt that way before? I can almost hear the Israelites grumbling. Why are we taking this route? It's so much longer. Doesn't this guy Moses know where he's going? But there's a reason for this route. God's promise was not to deliver them from the Philistines. His promise was to deliver them from the Egyptians. So God is protecting them from unnecessary difficulties and matters that are peripheral to the promise. At this moment, in this place, in this time, God's deal was between the Egyptians and the Israelites. Do you see how God will get you through difficulty? God will protect us from issues that are not central to the promise He has given us. You might be on the long road because that's the best road. Because the shortcut has snares and foils that you don't need to face. So God will take us down that longer road as a way of protecting us and a way of preparing us for promise. Now as we continue, we're going to see Moses take a stand against fear and give prophetic promise. We're going to see a dramatic confrontation here between the Egyptians and the Israelites in Exodus 14, verse 10. So Moses is, or Pharaoh has let them go. They're running, and we pick up here in verse 10. As the Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians, marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have brought us out here in the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'?" There's that slavery thinking again, isn't it? We talked about that with the prodigal. We'd rather be a slave than to live in freedom, wouldn't we? "It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." I just can't even get my mind around that kind of thinking, that you'd rather be a slave than to face a little difficulty. But anyway, that's another message. Here we see the Israelites respond in fear and from a place of discouragement. The people are, again, only able to see their present circumstances, right? Pharaoh has said, let them go, and they should be rejoicing. Promise is coming to pass. Promise is being fulfilled. But they look in their rearview mirror, and here comes the Egyptian army, bearing down on them. And immediately they panic and go back into fear mode, right? Now, granted, it was the Egyptian army, all of them, chariots, the most powerful army on the face of the earth, chasing them down. We have to acknowledge that that's a very real threat. But so often we find ourselves thinking the same way, don't we? Anything comes against us and right away we're like, oh, it's not going to happen. We're done. Our present circumstances, though, are seldom as big as an Egyptian army. Has anyone ever had an Egyptian army chase you before? I know I haven't. I was in the military. I bet he hasn't had the Egyptian army chasing him. One of the ways we fight against this is to always keep the promise in front of us. And I will come back to that, and I'll talk more about that in coming weeks. But when we look in our rearview mirror and we see discouragement chasing our promise, we need to remind ourselves what the promise was, whether it was a personal promise that God gave us or a promise that we see in the Word of God. But we keep that promise in front of us, and we look only at the promise, and we look only at the giver of the promise. And I'm going to show you what Moses does here with this promise. This is beautiful. Moses has a completely different response this time. Picture it. They're up against a wall, so to speak. The Red Sea, or the Sea of Reeds, is in front of them. They've got no other way to go. The Egyptian army, all of them, are in their rearview mirror. The people are in total panic mode. And this is how Moses responds, picking up in verse 13. Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." The entire army is on their back, and he says, "God's got this. He's going to fight for you. You only need to be still." But do you see how this time Moses responds from a place of promise? He shows real leadership this time. He starts by telling the people not to be afraid, but then he speaks prophetically from a place of promise. He says that they will see their deliverance at the hand of the Lord and see it today. He turns, he faces that discouragement, he faces that army and says, "Not today, because we are standing on God's promise to deliver us." He is taking what the promise of God was and speaking it prophetically into the present circumstances. That's what living from a place of promise looks like. That's what faith looks like. We stare discouragement in the face and say, "This is the promise of God. This is what's going to happen." That's a whole different approach than to turn tail and run in discouragement and fear. But you see, it's a prophetic statement that Moses makes based on promise. He takes what the promise was and he just turns it into a prophetic statement. This is happening today. That's a beautiful thing. But then it gets even better. Moses says that they will never see the Egyptians again. This is another prophetic statement from a place of promise. But here's the thing. It doesn't appear that God ever told Moses or the people that he would destroy the Egyptians. He only promised them that he would deliver them. So as Moses understands that as long as Pharaoh and the Egyptians are alive, they will forever be a torment and trouble to the Israelite people. Do you see that? He understands that the promise of God was to deliver them, to get them out of bondage. But Moses understands that if those Egyptians are still alive, they will forever be a torment to the Israelite people. And so, based on promise, Moses says, these Egyptians will be destroyed and you will never see them again. That is faith. That is understanding what promise is, and that is faith. So in line with promise, he declares what needs to happen. We can live that boldly. We can live from that kind of a bold place of faith. When something is standing in the way of our promise and it needs to be eliminated, we can speak to it that way. This is an obstacle between me and promise. I declare it gone. Because we're speaking from a place of promise. Then Moses reminds the people that this is not their fight. God's promise was that he would be the one to deliver them. God's promise is that he is going to do this work. So Moses says that the Lord is going to destroy your enemy right before your eyes, and you get a front row seat. How incredible is that? You see, the enemy, whether it be Pharaoh or Satan, in his ignorance, always overplays his hand. And this is exactly what Pharaoh is about to do here. He chased them from a place of ignorance, and he would not give up. The same holds true for us. We can speak prophetically and watch the enemy overplay his hand. That is one thing you can be sure of. The enemy will overplay his hand. And when we speak prophetically promise into that situation, we can watch the enemy fall. But we must be living from a place of promise, not from a place of discouragement and fear. All right, so now we have to ask, what changed for Moses? He just stood up, faced this Egyptian army, and said, "You will see your deliverance today, and the Egyptians you will see no more." But what changed? Because back a few chapters, he was afraid to even go speak to Pharaoh. And now with the angry Egyptian army breathing down his neck, he speaks prophetically of the coming promise and destruction. What changed? Did he have more time to read his Torah? No, because the Ten Commandments hadn't even been given yet. Did he get a better understanding of theology? I doubt it. The answer? Prayer, presence, and power. Let me explain. Prayer. From the moment God first gives the promise at the burning bush, Moses has been in a constant communication with God. Moses never saw prayer as a one-way conversation with your eyes closed. He saw it as conversation with a friend. Every time they got into trouble, every time they faced difficulty, Moses runs to God in prayer and asks for help. Now, granted, some of those prayers sounded a lot like whining, but at least he's being honest. But he has gone to God in prayer every time. Every time he goes to God, "God, why is this happening? Why me?" A little whiny, but he's at least going to God and he's asking. He's in prayer constantly. Read through the book of Exodus. Moses is constantly praying to the Father. Now, the answer might not have always been what Moses wanted. I'm sure he didn't want him to say, "Go speak to Pharaoh." He would have preferred, "Go take a vacation." But yet, God always responds. Every time, God responds to Moses' prayer. So Moses has been living a life of prayer since the promise was given. Now, presence. Since this is before the time of the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, the presence of God looks a little different than what it will look for us. This was also before the time of the ark. I've talked a lot about how the presence of God was always associated with the ark. Ark's not on the scene yet. So here for Moses, the presence of God is always represented by his staff. Okay? Moses has this staff. That represents the presence of God. But it's by having God's presence that was the key to their deliverance. So he's in a constant state of prayer, and God has given him a source of his presence with the staff. Stay with me. Power. Now, through Moses' communication with God and the presence of God with the staff, Moses was able to perform many powerful and supernatural miracles. Think of all the miracles that Moses performed and all the plagues that Moses inflicted on the Egyptians. And in almost every case, it says that Moses stretched out his staff. Of all the plagues, there's only two where the staff is not specifically mentioned. Every time they face a critical situation, even back in the plagues, when all the plagues were happening, it was his staff representing the presence of God. So he's in a constant state of communication through prayer. He's got the presence of God through the staff, and a result, power. And here he's going to hold up that staff and part the Red Sea. Later, when they need water, he's going to strike a rock and water is going to come out of it. So he is operating in prayer, presence, and power, but from a place of promise. All right, let's put this all together. By operating in prayer, presence, and power, Moses has developed a track record and a history with God. He has experienced God at such a level, he can now live from a place of promise. He can now stand and face this Egyptian army and speak prophetically what is about to happen from a place of promise because of his track record, his history with the Father, living through prayer, presence, and power. So do you see how living a life of prayer, presence, and power leads us to have a track record with the Father that allows us to walk out a life of promise? But now you think of all the hardships and the difficult situations that Moses has faced that brought him to this place. And you have to ask why. Why do we have to live through these difficult situations? If living from a place of promise was easy, everyone would do it. If living from a place of promise did not require hardship, it would be cheap and meaningless. So why does it have to be this way? Because when we, having come through great difficulties, can stand and face an Egyptian army and can stand in faith and speak and live our life from a place of promise, God gets the glory. Without the great difficulties, we would think we did that and steal the glory. Promise will always be followed by hardship. Because if the promise simply came, our human nature would say, I did that. Look at me. But he gives the promise first, then he leads us through a time of great difficulty so that when the promise is fulfilled, we have no choice left but to say, God did that. Because that was way beyond me. That was way beyond what I could have done. But it's with our own history with God, through difficulty, that helps us live from a place of promise. Our enemy, though, is not the difficulty, but the discouragement. Do you see that? God will give us promise. Then he will lead us into difficulty. The difficulty is not our enemy. And so often we get stuck there. Our enemy is the discouragement. When we live from a place of promise, we say no to discouragement. If I can conclude this message with just one statement, it would be this. When we live from a place of promise, we release the supernatural power of God to effect real change in our circumstances. Because he is the one that brings about promise.